you take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, May 24th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And we still only have 8 legalized states. The big breaking news story today, of course, Vermont's Governor Phil Scott has vetoed the first ever marijuana legalization bill to be passed by a state legislature. We'll tell you more on the cannabis headline news coming up after the first break. Also on the show today, it's Wednesday, so it's time for our Hemp Day Hump Day update. Joining us with the latest information on industrial hemp, we have the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, joining us today. Then, at halfway through the show, we're going to start our drug war data mining, but it's a two-parter. In part one, we're debunking Project Sam's report from October of 2016, claiming all sorts of terrible things have happened in Colorado and Washington since marijuana legalization. I'm going to dig deep into these numbers and show you just how they're trying to fool you and everyone else in America with regard to marijuana legalization. Also, we got the debut of a new segment, the Southeast Cannabis Chronicle. We're going to take you back to Atlanta, Georgia, and my speech on marijuana prohibition and racism that I delivered to the crowd at the 420 Safe Access event in Atlanta. Then in the Radical Rant, we'll take up part two of that debunking of the Project Sam report. And in hour two, Toker Talk Radio, we'll cover more of the stories today in depth. Stay tuned. The news is next.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net. The complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Wednesday, May 24th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Vermont Governor Phil Scott has vetoed what had been the first adult-use marijuana legalization law passed by a state legislature rather than by a citizen initiative. The Vermont Senate had passed the bill 20-9, enough of a margin to override the veto, but the Vermont House only passed the bill 79-66, below the two-thirds override margin, so marijuana legalization is officially dead for the session. Scott cited the risks of threats to highway safety as a reason for his veto. However, Vermont has been a medical marijuana state since 2004 and has consistently been in the top 5 states for marijuana consumption. Despite that, Vermont has been among the safest states in which to drive, as measured by fatalities per 100,000 miles driven. Governor Scott also cited a concern about access to marijuana by children in the wake of legalization. However, since 2004, Vermont has been either first or second in the nation in the monthly use rate of marijuana by children aged 12 to 17. It appears that keeping marijuana criminalized for adults in Vermont isn't doing anything to reduce teen use. Massroots' Tom Angel reports that President Trump, in reversal of a previously floated 94% cut for the Office of National Drug Control Policy, included robust funding for the office in his fiscal year 2018 budget request. The proposal also marks a turnaround from the Obama administration's slow shift toward emphasizing funding for largely health-focused demand reduction programs over drug war-style supply reduction efforts, devoting $12.1 billion for the former compared to $15.6 billion for the latter. And while the president suggested continuing a rider that protects state industrial hemp programs, he didn't include medical cannabis protections in the request. However, the document does contain language that is slightly more friendly to Washington, D.C.'s ability to spend money on marijuana reforms than is a rider in the recently enacted fiscal year 17 appropriations bill. In a phone call from the White House last month, U.S. President Donald Trump heaped praise on Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, one of the world's most murderous heads of state, for doing what Trump called a, quote, unbelievable job, end quote, in his war on drugs. Trump offered an unqualified endorsement of Duterte's bloody extermination campaign against suspected drug dealers and users, which has included open calls for extrajudicial murders and promises of pardons and immunity for the killers. Quote, "You are a good man," Trump told Duterte, according to an official transcript of the April 29th call produced by the Philippine Department of Foreign Affairs and obtained by The Intercept. Quote, "Keep up the good work," Trump told Duterte. "I just wanted to congratulate you because I am hearing of the unbelievable job on the drug problem," end quote, Duterte told, or Trump told Duterte at the beginning of their call, according to the document, including, quote, "Many countries have the problem, we have a problem, but what a great job you are doing, and I just wanted to call and tell you that," end quote. Whoopi Goldberg says New York should allow medical marijuana to be used to treat extreme menstrual cramps. The actress and co-host of The View issued a statement Tuesday urging legislators and Governor Cuomo to get behind a bill sponsored by Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal, a Democrat of Manhattan, that would expand New York's tightly controlled medical pot program to cover dysmenorrhea or menstrual cramps. Quote, "Women have used cannabis for menstrual pain for as long as time, and this pain is real for a lot of us," end quote, Goldberg said in a statement. Rosenthal's bill was approved Tuesday by the Assembly Health Committee in a 24-2 vote, but it's uncertain when or if it will reach the full Assembly for a vote. The measure has also not found a sponsor in the GOP-controlled Senate. A Rhode Island State Superior Court judge has ruled in favor of a woman who sued a Westerly Fabrics company for not hiring her as a summer intern in 2014 because she was a registered medical marijuana user. Christine Callahan, a graduate of the Savannah College of Art and Design, sued Darlington Fabrics Corporation, alleging the company violated the state's medical marijuana law, which protects users from discrimination in employment. The judge said in April that no matter how he ruled, his decision would likely be appealed to the state Supreme Court, since it could have wide implications. More than 17,000 Rhode Islanders are registered so-called cardholders. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Wednesday, May 24th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Shark Sessions from the Marijuana Show. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Jack Herer once said that hemp could save the planet. Today, we take a look at the non-drug use of the cannabis plant as fuel, fiber, food, and more. Now, let's restore hemp for victory in this Hemp Day Hump Day Update.
Well, it's Wednesday, and that means it's time for our Hemp Day Hump Day Update. And joining us this time for the update, we've got acclaimed author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, is joining us from the Goat Ranch in New Mexico. How you doing, Doug?
Oh, I'm feeling blessed, and it being planting season, a bit harried, Russ.
I'm sure you are. Glad you could take some time to talk with us. And in the news most recently when it comes to industrial hemp, we got word of the governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey, vetoing industrial hemp legislation like his next-door neighbor, Susana Martinez, did in New Mexico. What's going on in the Southwest with these governors and industrial hemp?
In short, it's bad governors, but bigger picture, as a hemp entrepreneur, in the ground, everything that I'm dealing with is a sign that the industry is growing. So to give you an example, we had a multi-ton harvest in Vermont last year. So federal policy now protects hemp farmers, that are permitted hemp farmers, research project hemp farmers. The Justice Department is prohibited from interfering in Thomas Jefferson's favorite crop, including interstate movement between hemp programs and hemp, as long as they are permitted federal programs under the current regulations. So that's great. So states like Kentucky are saying, oh, no problem, Kentucky farmer. You like these guys, Vermont, high-quality Vermont seed and the product they got out of it last year? Go ahead, market research with them. So they market purchased a lot of seed from us in Kentucky. No problem. Other states are doing the same. At the same time, other states, so what I'm talking about here is not vetoing and legislation. I'm talking about policy, Russ, when you get into the regulations and what's really happening in the ground. Instead of this awesomely important plant being embraced and welcomed on all levels, instead, in a state like Washington, for instance, where I'm helping the Colville Native American tribes start their hemp program, you're, first of all, not allowed to cultivate hemp for flower in their hemp program. Sure, cultivate ganja if you're part of the psychoactive, but no, that's suspicious, no flower, okay. Now, no domestic seed. Why not support American farmers with higher, incidentally, in my opinion, higher quality genetics? Force us to engage Justice Department agencies and import inferior seed from foreign cultivators? Why on earth would you want to do that? I have one suggestion. One is that our Vermont group allows you, like farmers always are and should, to replant your seeds. And a lot of people don't like that. They want to force you to buy seeds in a big ag style, no replanting, farmers a serf, a one-year leaser of the seeds mentality, and we ain't playing. So we're fighting, and it's a pain. And I feel like that those libertarian entrepreneurs are always whining about government regulations, but all I'm wanting the government to let us do is, you know, work to try to heal soil, mitigate carbon, and save humanity and rebuild an economy for the 21st century. That's all.
So Arizona and New Mexico won't be joining us on those endeavors this year, but is there any forecast for the future, or is it just going to be have to wait until we change governors in those states?
And that's wait till we change governor in those states. Yeah, my home state in New Mexico's governor is forcing me to generate carbon miles, although I try to drive on vegetable oil as often as I can. Getting to Vermont, to plant because she has three times vetoed our bipartisan pest hemp bills. It's unconscionable, but like I can't look in the rearview mirror. This is too important, and all you have to do is look around and find the places where they are, which is, you know, kind of why I just said the governor's suck and went on to like the policy stuff, is because it's like, you know, you just look for where the friendly locales are, and they exist in many places in the U.S. to really do a great job with hemp. No program is perfect, but Kentucky, Colorado, Vermont, those are awesome states for hemp cultivation right now.
So what is the next step happening in these states that are moving forward? Because what I understand under the Farm Bill that these are research crops. And so how is the research going and what's the next step in the research?
Oh, man. So I have to say, Russ, that in Hemp Bound, the book, I did predict, being an optimist, I had no choice, but I did predict that that what the rest of the world was underestimating about how fast and big the American hemp industry is going to emerge is that good part of the American spirit, that good go get 'em, never say die, I want this to happen, and so I'm going to work without sleep till it happens mentality, and it works, and it's a big part of why America innovates so many things, from, you know, Silicon Valley to auto industry and all that stuff going back in time. And so in my view, that is, and sure enough, the genetic development especially, let alone new applications, good marketing, and efforts to get processing infrastructure going, are moving so much faster than anybody would have anticipated, that it's probably causing stress for the existing hemp industry elsewhere in North America and across the pond, because getting back to the genetic side, if an organization is going to play games about getting genetics to farmers, there's a lot of different ways to play games about it, but we already talked about the whole farmers or serfs game, that we Americans, we don't need them. Sorry, we got the genetics we need here. So the only thing that's just business. I don't blame folks, and also I do honor and have respect for people that make the argument that we spent a lot of time on research and development and we want to market and brand those seeds. I'm just saying that's fine for anyone who wants them. We have other seeds, and we're going to do it our way, and we want it to be a level playing field. And if people want to work under your rules, well, let them do that. But so that's just business, and I get that. I actually bear no animosity to anybody that's – in fact, I appreciate the genetic development, and I support it. I support people that are doing very special things that people want. That said, we are entering the open source era, and we don't need we don't need to play by those rules. What's unconscionable is the legislators and regulation that are not allowing this plant to be openly cultivated. I'm a journalist paying close attention because there's going to be accounting of why this was happening in the early days of hemp. Imagine the early days of Silicon Valley and Steve Jobs being told, well, you can develop computer technology, but you can only use up to a fourth grade vocabulary with English. If there's too many special words, that we perceive that to be a threat, we, the government, say, you can't do that. You can't stifle it. It's the next big thing. Hemp is really happening, not just hemp, but the bioeconomy is the solution, the only possible solution for humanity, I think, in terms of long-term survival. And restricting it is unconscionable. And those that are doing it, especially if they're doing it at the behest of entities whose bottom line is trying to restrict farmers' access to seed and genetics, that's not cool. That's not okay. That's not America. And so we're going to call them on it. Meanwhile, I'm not giving up. The industry's growing by double digits. It's just a bit of ninja training at this point. You really got to be on the ball and want to be in it if you're in hemp right now.
You mentioned earlier the cultivation of hemp for its flower, which is something that's kind of a new development or a resurgent development in hemp, given the popularity recently of cannabidiol, CBD oil for the kids that are suffering from epileptic seizures. Meanwhile, you've also got companies that are proclaiming that they're already selling hemp-based CBD, but they claim it comes from the stalks. Give us your rundown on this development of a hemp flower for medical purposes.
First of all, I'm glad you used the word, whatever you said, resurgence or reappearance, or that it's coming back, because I'm of the belief that the cannabis plant is the cannabis plant, and that pretty soon we won't be discussing delineations in the cannabis plant based on THC unless the final product that reaches market has an active threshold of THC, of a psychoactive component, above that locality's threshold, in which case it would be regulated something like alcohol, something that's for adults. And so I believe we're in the final stages. The most conservative of hemp supporters in federal Congress, for instance, are on board with raising the arbitrary and insane and counterproductive 0.3% definition of hemp today. And it works both ways. Gary Johnson, we may have talked about this in an earlier Hump Day, Russ, but Gary Johnson, the former governor of New Mexico, his first investment venture in cannabis was in a very, very low THC edible, like a mint or something like that, chocolate or something, really low. And it wasn't called hemp, it wasn't, it was practically hemp definitions, but the point was aged relative with arthritis is discovering incredible relief through cannabis but doesn't want to get too high kind of situation. And so when the cannabinoids in the plant, whether THC, CBD, or any of the other, you know, 80 plus known, in entourage effects with each other, with terpenes, with bioflavonoids, they come from the flower part of the plant primarily. I'm sure you can extract some from other parts of the plant, but primarily that's the concentration of where those cannabinoids reside. And so whether we call it hemp or cannabis, to me, is it is irrelevant. It's what do you want in your final product? And just to give one sort of last punctuation on that, there are people who enjoy the act of smoking. That's an adult choice they can make. They don't want to be rolling top shelf 26%, or should I say home growing, because that's my last activist frontier, is everybody must be allowed everywhere to be allowed to grow any urban plant that they want without a government telling them what to do. In their garden, they might not want their own 26% THC. They may want to have a pack rolled of 1%, 3%, or mainly CBD for chronic muscular dystrophy, really, whatever it is. And so we're going to start seeing these options that are very different from the way people talk about it today. And then quickly, if I could, Russ, to you're always so tolerant of my, verbose and complete answers. But the other side, you mentioned, people making claims about this or that. I'll tell you, if anybody is concerned, I've been saying this since researching psychoactive cannabis 10 years ago. Any problem with anything in the cannabis industry is resolved by ending prohibition. When issues are Wild West and there are people who are willing to exploit people that are desperate, that has nothing to do with cannabis, medicine, or anything else. It's just, unfortunately, C.S. Lewis said some people are just bent, society bends them, or their upbringing bends them, and there are bad people doing bad things. And so I don't buy into the storyline of that there's such a issue and focus of problems with legit or real CBD, because I'm so dang selective with anything that's in my life, let alone anything that I put in my body, Russ. It's just a lifestyle choice that I'm not just I, a lot of people are making these days. And so forget about a CBD product, knowing your farmer. I try to know my farmer on my carrots. I know my goats for my milk. And so I'm not making that choice of putting my family at risk. And it's not just I. Anybody who pays a little bit of attention and does a real lot of research, if you want to know legitimate CBD producers, ping me, folks. I'll tell you, because they're out there.
All right. Well, that's good news to hear. Doug, why don't you give folks some of the contact information they need to find out more from you or from your writings?
Thanks, as always, Russ. This is always it helps me frame what's going on in the ground. And by the way, what's going on in the ground besides planting in Vermont next week is, I think I may have mentioned, I'm helping the Colville Tribes with a 60-acre project. And so that we hope is going to be planted right quick. But for the latest, I do tweet every day at Organic Cowboy. Two C's, one word, Organic Cowboy. And you can sign up for my dispatches from the Funky Butte Ranch at my website, which is just my name, DougFine.com.
All right, Doug Fine, one of my favorite experts on the world of industrial hemp. Thanks for joining us for the Hemp Day Hump Day update, and good luck to you and the goats.
Thanks as always, Russ. Keep up the good work.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
It's time for cannabis facts about Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the UK Cannabis Chronicle from the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we take a look at a report that was produced by Project SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, that purports to claim all sorts of terrible results from the legalization of marijuana in the states of Colorado and Washington. Today, I'm going to take a look at that October 2016 report in a presentation I call Lies, Damned Lies, and Statistics, How Project SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, Manufactures Scary Statistics About Marijuana Legalization, and the truth you need to debunk them. The report is called Lessons Learned After 4 Years of Marijuana Legalization in Washington and Colorado. And the first scare is that, oh no, more people are smoking pot in Colorado and Washington. This is accompanied by some scary charts showing a 19.76% increase in marijuana use in Colorado, a 11.92% increase, this is year by year since legalization, compared to the U.S. average of 5.66%. SAM also wants to scare you about the kids by showing a 9.53% year-by-year increase in Colorado and a 3.18% increase year-by-year in Washington. Of course, this ignores many other states that don't have legalization that also saw huge rises in marijuana use. Two non-medical states, Kansas and Maryland, beat Colorado with 26 and 21% increases. And seven non-medical states beat Washington, Kansas and Maryland, plus Missouri, Louisiana, Georgia, Arkansas, and Utah, all ranging between 12.5 to 16% marijuana use year by year changes. And when it comes to the kids, Colorado did see the greatest increase in teen marijuana smoking, an average year by year change of 9.56%. However, Washington was eighth in the list and was beaten by Maryland, Florida, Kansas, and Louisiana. And Project Sam is fooling you by only taking their data to 2014. If you extend that 1 year farther into 2015, we find that Colorado drops to ninth for the average year-by-year change at just 2.5%, while Indiana leads the nation in the greatest growth in teenage marijuana use since legalization at 9.56%. Project Sam also wants to scare you with this chart showing, oh no, states that have legalized marijuana smoke more pot. And it indicates how the legalized and medical states dominate the top of the monthly smoking percentages, while the prohibition states are all clustered near the bottom. Well, duh. What Sam's implying here is that legalization of marijuana leads to more marijuana smoking, but in truth, states that have more marijuana smoking are more inclined to legalize marijuana. It's a chicken and the egg thing, and he's getting the causation backwards. If you look before the legalization of marijuana, you'll find eight of the top 10 states had higher marijuana use rates even before they legalized marijuana, as shown by these charts for 2002, 2009, and 2011, where eight of the top 10 states are the same eight states. Also, Kevin Sabet and Project Sam like to scare people by saying, oh no, there are more pot dispensaries than McDonald's and Starbucks. Well, this stat's supposed to frighten people about the ubiquity of marijuana dispensaries, as if Colorado and Washington are being overrun by pot shops. But why does Project Sam only compare one supplier of coffee and hamburgers to all the suppliers of marijuana? Doesn't that seem like an apples to oranges bought only at Walmart comparison? If we expand those numbers and take a look at the number of pot shops versus number of coffee shops just in the largest city, we find that Denver coffee shops and Colorado pot shops are about the same number. In Washington, there are twice as many coffee shops in Seattle as there are pot shops in the entire state of Washington. And in Oregon, it's about the same, just about twice as many coffee shops than in Portland than all the pot shops in the state of Oregon. Compare that to fast food joints, and you'll find 4 to 6 times the number of fast food joints in Colorado, Washington, and Oregon than you will find pot shops. Now, indeed, that's all fast food, so that's counting tacos and chicken and stuff that aren't burgers. But we aren't considering all the places where one could buy a hamburger, because this doesn't include places like Red Robin and other high upscale burger restaurants, nor does it include any of the pubs, restaurants, shacks, taverns, all the places a person can get a hamburger, nor does it compare all the places one can get a cup of coffee, which is, aside from just coffee shops, damn near every restaurant and bar in those states, as well as places like rest stops where senior citizens are giving it out for free. Project Sam also wants to scare people by saying, oh no, legalization of marijuana has created more homelessness. And in fact, they show a graph that shows in July 22, there was 28,000 shelter usages in Denver compared to 42,000 by 2015. And according to Project Sam, quote, the easy availability of marijuana post-legalization also appears to have swelled the ranks of Colorado's homeless population. While overall U.S. homelessness decreased between 2013 and 2014 as the country moved out of the recession, Colorado was one of 17 states that saw homeless numbers increase during that time, end quote. Oh, so 1/3 of the United States saw homeless numbers go up and not 1/3 of the United States legalized pot, right? This is designed to get the reader to recoil in disgust at the thought of more homeless people sleeping on the streets. However, if you look at other statistics, one finds this to be a meaningless concern. It's increasing rents and more residents that have led to the increase in homelessness in these cities and these states.
Plus, Washington and Colorado populations went up 10 and 8% respectively. We'll have part two in the Radical
Rant. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's TheSilverTour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at HempInc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, Kevin Sabet's boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaman Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too. It wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Veterans of Compassion with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
All right, all right. Hey, next person, I don't know if you guys really do your research in the game and find out the important players before you get in, so that way you know who to, you know, basically the recruit to your team or who to wind up zoning up on. So, you know, When I got my research in the industry, it was a name kept coming up, Russ Belville. And I never knew who this cat was until I actually caught one of his podcasts. And now I understand why they call him Radical. The guy comes up with a whole bunch of just off concepts, but they really, if you sit down with them, they make a lot of sense. So if you get a chance, if you can listen to him on this podcast, I'll let him introduce that to you. But please, Russ Belville, if you can, think, be careful. I did the same thing.
Thank you, Coach.
Thank you, man.
My name is Russ Belville. I flew in here from Portland, Oregon, where marijuana is legal, and yet the world still is functioning. We still have people going to school. We still have people going to work. We don't have more people using marijuana. We don't have wrecks on the freeway. Everything they said would happen bad if we legalized has just not happened. So as Coach mentioned, I'm the host of a podcast. It's called The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. I've just logged about 4,000 hours of podcasting since 2008. I also write for High Times, Weed News, Green State, Huffington Post, Marijuana Politics, and I am the founder of Portland Normal in Portland, Oregon, and was the associate director of Oregon Normal. So much for that amotivational syndrome, right? Getting a lot of stuff done. So I'm here to talk about marijuana prohibition because it's a very important thing to me. It's something I've been fighting for since about 2006, and I've met a lot of wonderful people. And in that 14 some odd years of going to various events, I've been to 60 cities in 24 states and three countries. This rally here marks a first in my career. This is the first time I've ever spoken at a rally where there are more black faces out there than white ones. First time ever. Now, granted, I'm from Idaho, so that's gonna shift the curve a little bit, but I've been all over the country, California, Washington, New York. This is the first time. And it's always shocked me. It's always surprised me. I worked for Normal for 4 years. I was the outreach coordinator, and I always wanted to get more minority involvement, more people of color in this, because frankly, they're not coming after me. I'm a middle-aged white guy with a cop's haircut. They're not coming after me. So I wanted to get more people involved, more communities involved, because frankly and honestly, and let's be absolutely clear about this, marijuana prohibition is a tool of enforcing white supremacy. There's a lot of reasons it was banned. Yeah, hemp competes with wood, and it competes with oil, and it competes with the pharmaceuticals and alcohol. Sure, that's all true too. But the main impetus behind this has always been a tool of enforcing white supremacy. In this country, we've had industrial hemp since 1611. It was the first crop planted at the first colonies in the United States. First crop, hemp. Our colonists could pay their taxes in hemp. It was a commodity that everybody knew about. Our presidents, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, Zachary Taylor, Andrew Jackson, there's a few of them that we have knowledge of. We have evidence of the fact they either used marijuana or used hashish, which was popular in the 18th century. So it was never really a problem at that point throughout the 1700s and the 1800s. In fact, in 1850, a doctor named O'Shaughnessy came to America, brought back information he had learned from India, and started teaching Americans about the use of cannabis as a medicine. Cannabis was entered into the U.S. Pharmacopeia in 1850. It was taken out in 1941. So cannabis was an official medicine in this country for 91 years. It's only not been an official medicine for the past 76. So there was nothing wrong with marijuana. There's nothing wrong with cannabis. Everybody knew what it was. Everybody was fine with all of that. Nobody ever made any laws or had any concerns about it until we start getting to the 1900s. Because then marijuana started getting associated with people who didn't look like me. In the 1900s, you had the Mexican laborers coming up into the Southwest, El Paso, Texas, into California, into Arizona, New Mexico. And there was a lot of fear like there is now. Oh, they're coming to take our jobs. And so they used marijuana prohibition as a way to enforce that, to be able to crack down on the Mexicans smoking their loco weed. And as you look in the South, starting in New Orleans and working its way up the Mississippi as blues and jazz started taking off, it was a lot of African-American performers who were popularizing the use of marijuana. Here's some quotes from the time, just to give you an idea. In 1905, this is a quote from the Los Angeles Times. Not long ago, a man who had smoked a marijuana cigarette attacked and killed a policeman and badly wounded three others. Six policemen were needed to disarm him and march him to the police station where he had to be put into a straitjacket. Such occurrences are frequent. People who smoke marijuana finally lose their mind and never recover it, but their brains dry up and they die, most of the time suddenly. I don't know what they were smoking in 1905, but I never smoked anything like that. In 1911, Harry J. Finger, he was a member of the California State Board of Pharmacy. He testified in the California Senate, quote, "Within the last year, we in California have been getting a large influx of Hindus, and they have in turn started quite a demand for cannabis indica. They are a very undesirable lot, and the habit is growing in California very fast. The fear is now that it is not being confined to the Hindus alone, but that they are initiating our whites into the habit," end quote. In my home state of Idaho, 1928, the Mexican beet field workers have introduced a new problem, the smoking of cigarettes of pipes of marijuana. Idaho has no law to cope with the use and spread of this dangerous drug, end quote. So the racism was beginning to foment in America to be able to keep black and Latino people down, and it culminated in the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act that Dianne Fornbacher mentioned. Harry J. Anslinger testified for that act, and in front of Congress, he said, "I wish I could show you what a small marijuana cigarette can do to one of our degenerate Spanish-speaking residents. That's why our problem is so great. The greatest percentage of the population is composed of Spanish-speaking persons, most of whom are low mentally because of social and racial conditions." He also said, There are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the U.S., and most are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana use. This marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and any others. And, of course, the coup de grace, Harry Janslinger's most famous quote, "Reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men." So this was all the underpinnings of how the racism culminated in marijuana prohibition. In fact, the word marijuana itself was used to distract people who knew what cannabis was, who knew what hemp was. But people look at that, they say, well, that was 1937. That was 80 years ago. In fact, we're approaching the 80th anniversary in October of marijuana prohibition. And interesting aside, the first guy who was ever busted under the federal law was a white guy named Samuel Caldwell. But the marijuana prohibition continued throughout the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, and nobody really paid much attention to it until the late 50s, early 60s, when white liberal kids started using it on the college campuses, protesting the Vietnam War, calling for better social conditions, and calling for more racial harmony and equality between the sexes. So it was then that a Harvard professor named Timothy Leary sued the United States government, saying the Marijuana Tax Act was unconstitutional because you had to take your marijuana in to get the tax stamp. And once you took your marijuana in, you were violating the law. And that means you were losing your Fifth Amendment right. You were testifying against yourself. It was overturned, and then Nixon came up with the Controlled Substances Act. Now, when they came up with the Controlled Substances Act to ban marijuana, this started our modern-day war on drugs. And they used the same excuses that it was public health, that it was a danger. But again, at the root of it was good old-fashioned white supremacy and American racism. There was an article that came out in 2016 in Harper's Magazine. Dan Baum was the writer, and he had tracked down Ehrlichman, John Ehrlichman, who was one of the domestic policy advisors for Richard Nixon. He was actually working here in Atlanta, ironically enough, working on minority recruitment for an engineering firm. And he asked Ehrlichman, why did you guys start the war on drugs? What's behind the Controlled Substances Act? And this is what John Ehrlichman said, quote, "You want to know what this was really all about? The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about drugs? Of course we did." End quote. Now, I think one man said this best when it comes to why we are fighting against this prohibition of marijuana. Dr. Martin Luther King in 1963, writing from the Birmingham jail, said, "How can you advocate breaking some laws and obeying others? The answer lies in the fact that there are two types of laws, just and unjust. I would be the first to advocate obeying just laws. One has only not only a legal but a moral responsibility to obey just laws. Conversely, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. I would agree with St. Augustine that an unjust law is no law at all." Dr. King went on to quote St. Thomas Aquinas by saying, "An unjust law is a human law not rooted in eternal law and natural law." Eternal law. The Bible, page 1, says, "Herb-bearing seed, use it for meat." Natural law. Evolution produced this plant on the planet that trips our endocannabinoid system. Whichever way you look at it, it's an unjust law. Dr. King went on to say, "Any law that uplifts human personality is just. Any law that degrades human personality is unjust." And finally, "An unjust law is a code that a numerical or power majority group compels a minority group to obey, but does not make binding on itself. I live in a country where anybody that wants to of adult age can drink alcohol and smoke tobacco. That's the majority group's drugs. But they have made a code that says my minority group that likes cannabis, regardless of the color of our skin or the language we speak or the country we come from, have to follow a different law. It is completely irrational and outside the bounds of logic to have legal alcohol and tobacco, but illegal marijuana. Do not criminalize us for making the safer choice. Thank you, Atlanta, for having me out here. I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Appreciate your time.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
It's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's TheSilverTour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The marijuana agenda, like the alcohol agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the voice of the industry from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill. That was
the point. I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Kevin Sabet and the Puritan Prohibitionists over there at Project Sam have put together a report on the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and Washington. This October 2016 report claims all sorts of terrible things have happened since legalization, and I'm taking the time to debunk just a few of these assertions. The most recent of which we took a look at was Kevin Sabet's pronouncement that marijuana legalization leads to an increase in homelessness, as cited by looking at Denver's homeless population and the increases since 2012. And this is another example of how Kevin Sabet takes a statistic in a vacuum and leaves out important context that would pretty much rain on his parade when it comes to scaring people about marijuana. The increase in homelessness in Colorado owes to a lot of factors. First of all, according to Zillow, the real estate website, Denver's average rent increased 4.1% in 2016 and 5.9% in 2017. So Portland and Seattle also have had huge rent increases, 6% in Portland, 7.2% in Seattle. That is what contributes to homelessness. People can't afford to live in their homes anymore. The other thing that happens is that legalization increases economic activity. The grow shops and the grow sites and the pot shops start buying up all the commercial real estate, especially the warehouses. This leads to an economic boom in the real estate market. Home prices go up, and that also leads to increased residential costs. And Colorado's and Washington's populations have increased by 10% and 8% respectively since 2010. If they're going to have more people coming, and especially because the increase in the number of pot jobs and the opportunity in entrepreneurship that's happening in these states is what attracts people to that state. And that can also lead to increased homelessness. We've got a concern that, oh no, the businesses can't find workers who can pass piss tests. Well, first of all, they show a chart that shows an increase in marijuana positives from 2.7% in 2011 to 7.5% in 2015, nearly tripling. But that chart is showing you oral drug tests. Those are the saliva tests. Very few employers use those. They're expensive. But those are the ones that will give you numbers that show a tripling from 2011 to 2015. If they showed the urine screen tests, they'd only show an increase from 3.5% to 4.0%. That's a relative change of 1/7, not 300 times, or 300%, I should say. And second, the rest of the lines on that chart for opiates, cocaine, and amphetamines show a 19% decrease in opiates, a 12% increase in cocaine, 124% increase in amphetamines. However, these are all so micro. These are all below the 1% failure rate that the tiniest move in a relative sense appears to be so much greater than it actually is. When you look at it as a graph, they look fairly steady, that there hasn't been a whole lot of change. In fact, we don't see any sort of great increase that you'd expect if marijuana was the gateway drug they said it was. Still, we are seeing more people failing workplace drug screens for marijuana after legalization. And what does that mean? Well, oh no. Workers who smoke pot are absent, sick, and injured more. And Kevin Sabet provides these charts showing more accidents, disciplinary problems, absenteeism, and injuries among marijuana smokers, and twice as many marijuana smokers as the general population who missed work during the past 30 days, quote, because they just didn't want to be there, end quote. Well, the problem with Project Sam's fear-mongering about workplace issues and pot smokers, aside from that first study being from 1990, is that these studies don't control for what type of work the pot smokers are doing. Workplace drug screening keeps pot smokers out of the better jobs. Bans on financial aid for students, for those who fail a drug test, also prevent pot smokers from climbing the occupational ladder. Thus, your pot smokers tend to be disproportionately represented in the lower paying, harder working, more stressful service and manual labor industries than non-smokers. And yeah, people with lousy jobs might call in sick more often. People with lousy jobs might not want to go to work because they just didn't want to be there. Another concern of Project Sam post-legalization is, oh no, more youth of color are being busted for marijuana in Colorado after legalization. They show that there's a 5% increase in the number of youth being busted post-legalization, but that was an 8% decrease for whites, a 29% increase for Hispanics, and a 58% increase for blacks. These are people aged 10 to 17. But again, statistic in a vacuum. Yes, more minority juvenile arrests are a bad thing. However, these minors possessing marijuana are only subject to fines of $100 to $250 plus community service. Minors aren't prosecuted if they're calling 911 to help another minor who's having a problem. The rate of arrests for minors overall has only increased 5%. And if we look at all people, legalization has helped minorities more than it's helped white folks. Arrest rates for African Americans overall have declined from 622 per 100,000 the decade before legalization to under 300 per 100,000 now. Arrest rates for Hispanics have declined from 288 per 100,000 before legalization to under 120 per 100,000 since legalization. And another concern, oh no, pot shops will be concentrated in the minority neighborhoods. This is the scare point designed to blunt the attention to the racial disparities in prohibition enforcement by suggesting that pot legalization leads to a pot shop on every corner in the hood. It ignores the NIMBYism from the white affluent neighborhoods who force the zoning to put those in the more minority neighborhoods. And it ignores the fact that marijuana sales were already going on in the hood, but the sellers were criminals who solved their disputes with guns and paid no taxes. We'll tackle more of this in hour two, but that's all the time we got for now. Until
Follow
next time,
MD Agenda on
take
Facebook,
care of each other, tokers.
Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You say you're sweet, you're ready, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling.